Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Welcome, curious minds, to our deep dive today. We're getting into Katie Kitamura's novel, Intimacies. It's quite a book. It really forces you to look at how the personal and the political just can't be untangled. So if you've been wanting a way into thinking about, you know, contemporary ethics, emotional distance, well, this is a great place to start.
Absolutely. It's fascinating how Kitamura uses this huge global stage, The Hague, the International Court of Justice, but uses it to explore these really quiet internal struggles. So our focus today, it's really about language, displacement, moral ambiguity, how they all weave together, not just in the courtroom, but inside our main character, this unnamed multilingual interpreter.
Yeah, Kitamura has this style critics often call controlled intensity, which sounds about right. The surface is so precise, almost cool, but underneath, you've got these incredibly volatile human situations simmering. So our mission really is to unpack how this interpreter handles her job translating for a suspected war criminal year while also navigating this really difficult, ethically murky personal affair. We're basically looking at how we translate people, their motives, not just their words.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where the story kicks off. Our narrator arriving in The Hague. But she's not really arriving to something, more like fleeing from something. Her father's just died. A long relationship in New York has ended. So professionally, she's got it together, highly skilled. But personally, she's just fractured, looking for some kind of, I don't know, emotional cover.
That idea of flight is so important, isn't it? She's searching desperately for an anchor, something solid. And where does she land? The Hague, which is like the great irony here, a city dedicated to order, truth, global justice. But it feels so temporary, so transient itself, full of people just passing through.
Even the justice feels that way sometimes. Delayed, performed.
Right. And she fits right in a way. She herself is all about permeable borders.
Professionally, yes. She's an interpreter, fluent in multiple languages. She crosses those lines effortlessly. It's like her superpower, this technical skill.
But it clashes so dramatically with her personal feeling of being completely unrooted, lost almost.
And this really gets to the core technical aspect of her job, which becomes the source of so much internal conflict. Her role requires her to be, well, a transparent vessel, completely neutral.
A cipher, yeah. She has to mimic the tone, the pauses, everything without her own judgment creeping in.
Imagine the emotional labor involved in that, voicing the words of a man accused of horrific crimes while being bound to neutrality.
It's immense, that pressure, this professional need for passivity, for neutrality.
It's a job requirement.
Exactly. But she's a person. She needs connection, certainty, like anyone else.
So she is constantly suppressing her own moral compass, her feelings, every time she's in that booth.
This duty to be invisible is just fundamentally at odds with her need to be seen, to be understood.
Mm-hmm. And she spends so much time translating other people's intentions. She almost loses the knack for articulating her own.
Yeah, this inability to really assert herself, it kind of sets the stage for the two big relationships defining her time in The Hague. These parallel conflicts, public and private, both steeped in ambiguity.
Okay, let's look at the two men involved. First, the public figure.
Yeah.
The former president. He's a West African ex-dictator on trial for these terrible war crimes. And the court forces her into this strange kind of professional intimacy with him. She has to translate his long, often complex stories, justifications, really trying to reshape the narrative.
And Kitamura is brilliant here. She doesn't make him just a simple monster.
No, not at all. He's presented as charming, intelligent, even philosophical at times.
A master of language, using it to obscure, to manipulate.
And she has to lend her voice, her very breath, to that performance of deception. It's chilling.
Then on the other side, the private conflict. Adrian, her lover.
No.
Who is married.
Right. And he's also charming, sophisticated.
Yeah.
But his defining trait is his elusiveness. Their whole affair seems built on this shaky ground of his complicated separation from his wife, Gabby.
It's just stuck in suspension, never moving forward, never really settling.
And there's the paradox, isn't it? So stark. She's physically close, linguistically intimate with both this dictator and this emotionally unavailable lover.
Yet she can't truly know either one. She's fundamentally alienated.
She witnesses the performance of power in court and the performance of maybe commitment in her affair.
And she's right there, facilitating both,
but
enabling them in a way.
Which forces us to ask that uncomfortable question about moral proximity, moral complicity.
Mm.
How does her participation in the private betrayal, just by being with Adrian, knowing about his wife, How does that echo her professional role with the war criminal?
In both cases, she's kind of enabling a situation built on a lie just by being there, by translating or participating.
It's not passive, is it?
Yeah.
It feels active somehow. Active facilitation.
Exactly. And this tension, it just builds and builds slowly. The novel moves through observation, psychological shifts, not big dramatic events.
Until things start to crack. Two key moments really shatter that illusion of the Hague's orderliness.
The first one is when her friend Jaina is violently mugged.
Oh, yes. That's such a critical moment. Because all the abstract violence she deals with in court, you know, distant atrocities sanitized by legal language, suddenly becomes immediate, physical, personal, right there in the supposedly safe, orderly city of justice.
And their reactions are so telling. Jana's is immediate, visceral. She wants justice, identifies the attacker.
She acts.
Right. But our narrator, she defaults to her professional mode, observation, passivity, analyzing the violence.
It shows how deep that observer role goes, doesn't it? Her inability to act for herself, for her own safety.
She's become the witness, even in her own life.
And at the same time, her private life is hitting its own crisis point.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian casually mentions he's thinking about moving to Lisbon.
Oh, that just pulls the rug out from under her.
Completely. Because she realizes the whole settled life. She'd started to imagine the apartment, the future. It was all a fantasy, built entirely around him being there, a foundation he could just pick up and move.
And this collision leads to the novel's climax, which isn't one big bang, but more like moments at sharp, sudden clarity.
Dual moments, really.
Yeah. First, in the courtroom, she's watching the former president, listening to him, and suddenly she just sees it. Sees past the performance, the charm, understands the cold, calculated manipulation behind it all. It's an intellectual breakthrough.
And then the private counterpart to that is her chance meeting with Gabby, Adrian's wife.
It's brief, polite even, but devastating.
Because Gabby's mere presence, her reality, reveals this whole shared history, this established world Adrian belongs to.
A world the narrator is completely outside of, fundamentally excluded.
It cements her status as temporary, a visitor in his life.
So this intersection, the professional insight, the personal exclusion, it brings us right to the novel's core engine. Translation and interpretation. There's that incredible line quoted in the sources. Translation was always a form of interpretation, and interpretation was always a form of betrayal.
That line just hits you, doesn't it? It's the philosophical heart of the book. We like to think translation is neutral, just mirroring words.
Yeah, like a clean transfer.
But Kitamura argues, no, every choice, which word, what emphasis, involves leaving something else out, selecting, omitting. So in choosing one meaning, you inevitably betray the original complexity, the full intent.
Wow. So if translation itself is always a betrayal, what does that mean for understanding people in our relationships?
Well, it suggests that maybe trying to fully know someone is impossible, inherently flawed. That the moment we think we've defined them, interpreted their actions definitively.
We've already simplified them, betrayed their complexity.
Exactly. And that links perfectly to the other major theme, witness and responsibility. Our narrator is the ultimate witness, professionally speaking. And the novel observes, the court was designed to create distance from trauma, but I was learning that witness always creates complicity.
That just blows up the whole idea of neutral observation, especially in legal settings.
Right. The court system tries to sanitize trauma, make it objective through rules and procedures.
But Kitamura says, no, witnessing changes you, whether it's global horror or private deceit.
Just watching, just translating without judging. It allows the lies, the violence to persist.
It creates this quiet moral weight, this obligation she feels but struggles to act on.
And this internal turmoil is why Kitamura's writing style is so powerful. That first-person narration, it's so restrained, precise, almost detached, cool.
But that coolness is the point, isn't it? It creates this incredible tension.
Absolutely. The calm surface is constantly contrasting with these boiling undercurrents of confusion, trauma, moral doubt.
The real drama is in what she doesn't say, what she holds back.
Which makes the resolution feel earned, even though it's quiet. Adrian does leave for Lisbon. The fantasy collapses.
But crucially, she doesn't chase him. And she doesn't run away from The Hague either.
No. Instead, she does something deceptively simple. She signs a lease for her own apartment.
That feels huge, monumental in its own quiet way.
It is. It's her finally planting a flag, choosing to stay, but on her own terms.
Not as someone's partner or someone's interpreter even, but as herself, defining her own ground.
And her emotional journey kind of completes there, doesn't it? When she stops needing absolute clarity She accepts the ambiguity, stops trying to solve Adrian or the president,
and starts living within that uncertainty, finding her own ethical footing within it.
Which leads to that profound redefinition of intimacy the novel offers. Remember that final thought. I understood then that intimacy might not be about knowing someone, but about accepting what you could never know.
That really challenges how we think about connection, doesn't it? Intimacy isn't about total knowledge, total understanding of another person.
No. Maybe it's about the commitment despite the unknowability.
Choosing to engage based on trust and acceptance, not on having all the answers.
I think the real power of intimacies is how it connects those huge global issues, justice, war, displacement, right down into the quiet anxieties of one person trying to find her way. It shows us that finding your place, your ethical center, in this complex world, it's all about navigating that uncertainty.
Yeah. Intimacies is just a powerful reminder that living ethically today isn't simple. It requires constant negotiation. And maybe the effort to understand, even knowing perfect understanding, is impossible. Maybe that is the most meaningful connection we can make.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.